You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC. We're on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we are heard on the World Wide Web everywhere.
Ellen, all over the world.
How can people listen to us?
And we've got listeners from all over the world, which is so complimentary for Sita the last 12 years, but you can listen in 1510wwbc.com. You'll be able to listen to us live. You just hit that listen live button. Or if you'd like to hear any of our downloaded shows, they're all archived there on the on demand section. Also, we share them on our Facebook page on Sita Media Inc. and also on our website, sitamediainc.com.
Yep. We have an action-packed show today. We sit here on Mondays, Ellen O'Neill, Samantha Nazari, and Paul and I, and we talk about things that are going on right here in Brevard County, Florida. We speak about things going on in and around the nation, the great old United States, and around the world. And our show's focus is always to bring out the best in people. How can we all collectively have a better world, an earth where when we leave our planet, we leave a good footprint behind? And as such, we've had guests on our shows who are politicians, bankers, mortgage brokers, authors, creative folks, artists. We've had actors. We had Billie Eilish's mom called in. We had people from all walks of life that call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we chat. And today's no different. In studio today, we have my good friend Suzanne Taylor, who's an attorney in town here, and she's also with the Zonta Club. So, Susan, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Second time you're on the show.
Yes,
and I love you.
You're
so wonderful. And Claire Ellis, my friend, we've been friends for a very long time. Thank you for always supporting Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And you guys are here today, Claire, to talk about the Zonta Club. So later on in the show, the second segment, Ellen, we'll be speaking about the Chocolate Festival. Mm. We'll be talking about the ERA and why it's not ratified as yet.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, it's because of a technicality that it was not put on the Federal Register. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that with Suzanne and Claire. And we're going to try to figure out why we don't have the 60 votes and one person in the United States Senate who has the nerve to bring up that on the floor. I wish I was there. I would.
You should see, folks, you can't see her texting her little fingers off. She's now getting in touch with people as we speak.
Well, our first segment is going to be with a friend of mine. I like to have my friends call in and speak about why they decided to throw their hat in the ring and run for office, whether it's on a local level, a state level, or a federal level. And today I have a girl, Ellen. I don't know if you know, if you've ever heard about Rebecca Jones. I love the way she spells her name. R-E-B-E-K-A-H. It's not but a C. Rebecca Jones. And she was launched into stardom in May of 2020 after she was canned, as in fired, for refusing to manipulate data about the state's plan to prematurely reopen data about COVID-19. And I think all of us were appalled when we saw what was happening to this beautiful young woman who obviously is quite educated and on top of her game as to what was happening with COVID-19 in the state of Florida, who was getting infected, who wasn't getting infected, where were the clusters at, and what she can do as a scientist to help our state. And what do you know? She was fired. She's on the phone. So, Rebecca, take it away. Good afternoon, and thank you for taking the time to call in on our show.
Well, thank you, Sita, for inviting me.
Yeah, so you are one of those ladies that stand up for what you believe in. And we've had multiple guests on our show, and we've had so many people that send me texts and emails and stuff that says, we need more women to run for office. And you're doing just that. So I applaud you for that. And from the bottom of my heart, I pray for you, because I know it's not easy to put your family and yourself on the line and go out there and try to make a difference in our world.
Yeah, I think one of the advantages I have over, you know, most people who maybe are just getting started in politics is that, you know, my personal life has kind of been a public journey over the last 2 years. You know, I've been in people's homes doing the news 5 times a day. I became someone that was trusted with COVID-19 data. You know, I founded the national tracking system with Google for COVID-19 in schools when no one else wanted to do it. So people already know who I am. And they knew who I was even before DeSantis really came after me with, of course, the raid on my home, in which they refused to give me a warrant when they pointed guns at my small children.
Yeah.
And from then on, my entire family was thrown into this. So everybody already knows who I am. Everything there is to know about me is already out there.
Yeah, and you're so an me, open book. And you're a whistleblower. But, you know, a lot of us are whistleblowers in our communities, in our homes, with our family, with our friends. But none of us made it to a status like you did, where your life is kind of like a reality show at this point. We saw what they did to you.
I hope it's not that bad.
Well, we saw when they went.
I don't want to be the Flavor Flav of whistleblowing reality TV.
Yeah. But you never know.
Somebody needs to be, by the way. I'm just letting you know. Yeah. Somebody's got to take that role.
You know what, though? It was not a bad thing, because we saw what happened to you, and our hearts went out to you, because all you were trying to do was help our state. And for the governor not to see that, it was really, for some of us, it was very sad, because I don't think you asked to be plunged into the limelight the way you were. You were just trying to do your job.
Yeah. I mean, actually, I refused to even talk to the press publicly for 5 days while everything was happening. And I wasn't even technically fired when DeSantis outed me and named me as the whistleblower to the entire world in front of the vice president. So I was trying to avoid the press and TV, like, unironically, the plague, because I've never been on TV before at that point. Like, I'd never done a news interview live on a, you know, show that tens of millions of people watch. That was terrifying to me. I just wanted people to know what was going on. But then I was, you know, he threw me out there, and they came after my family. And I thought, you know, what am I hiding from? And am I going to be able to sleep at night if I don't come forward and tell people the truth and what's going on because of some perceived necessity of keeping my family's privacy? Like, is my family really worth any more than anybody else's family in their lives? And ultimately, I decided that, you know, every family matters.
Well,
and I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I stayed quiet.
Well, you are a beautiful Cosmo girl. And not only are you beautiful, you're intelligent and you're very courageous for coming forward. I'm so proud of you, and I'm so glad to call you my friend, and I'm so grateful that you're taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, what made you decide that you were going to run for office, and tell us your district. I know is it the congressional first district?
That's right. It's the first district of Florida, which is currently being not represented by Matt Gaetz. And, you know, that story kind of tells itself, because it's almost poetic how polar opposite of him I am. And I never intended to get involved in politics. You know, I was completely content through all of 2020 being a public advocate for science and for evidence-based decision-making, and just really providing people information that they could make informed decisions about. Whatever decisions they made were up to them, but at least they had the right to know what was going on. Then after the raid, I realized that as much as I had tried to stay out of politics, I was disillusioned with the idea that that could be what happens. And I underestimated how sick DeSantis's obsession with me had become. And I vowed to myself and to my family that day, watching them, you know, go through my underwear drawers and claim that they were looking for evidence of a text message while, you know, scouring through my closets, that I would do whatever it took to make sure that DeSantis did not win re-election. I thought for months that meant, you know, helping out with Nikki Fried or you know, helping on the campaign trail for Democrats here. And then something completely unexpected happened, and I got protected whistleblower status from the state. So it's a really kind of weird thing that you have to do as a state employee to get whistleblower protection. You have to ask the agency that you're filing the complaint against to validate and legitimize your complaint, which seems, you know, ridiculous, but that's how it is. And my lawyers and I never imagined in a million years that the state would investigate itself and actually find that it did something wrong. But they did.
Wow.
And once I got that protection, once, you know, we won that battle, it became safe for me to try to do something more. And I thought long and hard about what my future would hold. And I thought, if I don't use this celebrity, this, you know, kind of science advocacy role that I've kind of come into to really affect some change, then what was the point? Okay, I was a legitimate Cosmo girl, but what does that actually matter in the grand scheme of things if nothing changes?
Well, you know, everybody has a purpose, right? And I think that it came knocking on your door that you would get involved in politics. That's, I think that's your purpose, because it came to you. You didn't go looking for this.
Yeah, it came to me, you know, locked and loaded, literally. And, you know, I grew up about an hour and a half from where I live now in the First District. I grew up on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And so this was an area that I grew up around, and I understand far more than I could, you know, urban California or even urban Florida, because I grew up in a rural place. And a rural place that I like to joke, you know, was all of the problems without any of the pretty, because our beaches were never pretty and you could not swim in them. We actually had like a feces ban in Gulfport for a long time that you couldn't swim in the Gulfport beach. So I said if I could live anywhere in the world, I would live right here my whole life. I just never imagined I'd be able to afford to do it. So, of course, Matt Gaetz has been on my radar for a long time because of his general character flaws. And as soon as I found out about the sex trafficking, you know, investigation and how serious that was and how blasé they were being about it, it became much more personal to me, because I sent my own grandfather to prison in the Philippines after I turned him in for sex trafficking underage girls.
Wow.
And it kind of ripped my family apart. There were people in my family who didn't speak to me for quite some time, for years, because they thought it was a private family matter. And this happened before COVID, or, you know, before I became famous. And I just couldn't imagine knowing that that was happening and not saying something. So, you know, I wrote the FBI in Jacksonville, which is the state, you know, headquarters for Florida, and Pennsylvania, where he was from. And it took 7 months. And eventually, you know, I worked with with ICE and Homeland Security and the Filipino police, and they locked him up.
Yeah. Well, you've demonstrated it. You certainly are a fighter for people. And, you know, you're honest. You have good integrity. And it's amazing that you didn't run for office before all of this, you know. But I'm looking
at... You have to be kind of crazy to an extent to want to do this if you're not already a part of this world. I mean, it was to me just dizzying how different the world of politics is. The lack of professionalism, the lack of ethics, the corruption, even within the local Democratic, you know, infrastructure. I was just floored by how petty it can be sometimes. It's like, are we not all working towards the same goal?
Yeah, I hear you. I just had a conversation with somebody about that this past weekend. But anyways, when I see you in person, I'll have to tell you. But I was going to ask you, how do we get dark money out of politics? I mean, how do we elect real people with real feelings and compassion and respect for others and respect for themselves? People who will listen to both sides and say, I hear you. How do we get that done?
Well, we have to get rid of Citizens United. That is a must. It's something that is incredibly popular to do across both political spectrums. And it seems like kind of one of these, like, no-brainer legislations that, you know, people in Congress shouldn't be able to trade stocks. And unfortunately, it hasn't happened because the people that have the power are only interested, it seems, in maintaining that power. And the way that they do that is with millions of dollars funneled through various, you know, super PACs and private entities. And it needs to just happen. Because until we get rid of that, it's going to be impossible for, let's say, a local community leader who's widely respected but is going up against, you know, the Matt Gaetz of their own district to be able to raise the kinds of money that he has just from, you know, being a fanatic on Fox News or OAN. It's just impossible. You don't have the money to reach, you know, all of the people in your district to tell them who you are when you're up against those kinds of odds. And
yeah.
So it's legislation that needs to happen that I absolutely support, that I want to see done, you know, on day one of the next congressional office. And I really will fight hard for that. And as far as getting people who are good people, that is kind of one of these, how many millennia have we had this problem with the people who, you know, actively seek out power being people who only want power? And how many people, you know, are normal people that just get thrust into celebrity like the way that I was? You know, it doesn't happen that much. I became famous because I was being unfairly targeted. That's not something that's, you know, happy.
And, well, there's a reason. There's a reason why your name, for those of us who follow politics and follow what's happening in Tallahassee and what's going on with public education, what's going on with the environment, what's going on with women's rights, what's going on in Tallahassee as a whole, your name is a household name. And I'm of the firm belief there was a reason for that. But here's the thing. You hit the nail on the head. There are a lot of politicians from both sides that all they care about is that list for the heavy donors for re-election. It's almost as if they get elected and right away their staff starts working on the re-election and how can they use code words to reach their base, like words like, you know, they say things to appeal to people. And I think that is part of the reasons why a lot of people won't run, because they don't have that list. And the other person has that advantage.
Yes, it's always difficult beating an incumbent for a number of reasons, finances, name recognition, things like that. I'm fortunate enough that I have name recognition and we're working on the finances. And obviously, I would encourage anybody who, you know, wants to donate to our campaign to go to our website and do that. But it's. I always tell people, ask yourself why this politician is doing this. Do they actually care? Like the truck driver thing that's going on right now. Do you think DeSantis knows any Canadian truck drivers? Do you think he knows any truck drivers in general? My father is a truck driver. He's been a truck driver since 2008. But I'm not, you know, playing this card of my father's a truck driver and I'm going to use this language to make sure that truck drivers side with me instead of him because we're at war with each other. No, it's about being consistent. Did any of these people care about truck drivers, you know, 2 weeks ago before this all happened? Did they care about how rising gas prices were affecting, you know, owner-operators? Or other than to just complain about Joe Biden and inflation? No, they didn't. Because they don't know anyone like that. None of their lives or anybody that they care about lives are dependent upon something that fundamental. Whereas, you know, that's my family. My family looks like an American family. My dad's a truck driver. My older sister is a teacher. She won speech and debate teacher in Mississippi for the year twice now. My younger sister's an ER nurse. My little brother is a cop. I became a scientist. You know.
Well, that's your ad. You just gave us your ad. I really think you should talk about your father being a truck. I'm sorry, but I think Democrats don't know how to message properly, and you just messaged your whole campaign. You just talked about your family. And I have ladies in the studio nodding. You talked about your all-American family, your working class, your father is a trucker. Why not? I mean, why not?
Oh, I did talk about it.
Girl, go make an ad. Make an ad and put us in there to clap. Shout out.
Well, for people who are looking at this, I asked them to look, did this person ever show any concern or care about this before this moment? You know, I've been talking about my father being a truck driver, and before that, you know, he was in construction until the crash in 2008. And before that, he was a sheriff's deputy. And, you know, I talk about this consistently all the time because it's my dad. He's not a millionaire. He's not connected. He depends upon this work for his livelihood. And I know how difficult of a struggle that is. Did any of these people who are all supposedly upset about it now care at all before this became a national news story? No, they didn't. So look for those people who are always talking about what it's like to be a normal family, because they are one. That is the way that we try to find normal people to elect office. Are the ones who actually know what it's like to have to work to feed your family.
That's correct.
The problem is that we have too many millionaires in Congress who don't have the first clue what it's like for a truck driver. They really don't. I mean, My dad lost his house in the tornadoes that hit Mississippi on Easter Day in 2020. And he lived in his truck for over a year until they could get the insurance to start working on his new one. So I guess that's effectively being homeless. But, you know, the cab is pretty big. It's got bunk beds and everything. But still, like, how many people actually know what it's like to worry about your dad living in his truck because his home was destroyed from a natural disaster? Not sure if the way that the economy is going, he's going to be able to even pay to keep his own owner-operator business. They don't know.
Well, you just led me right into my other question that I wanted to ask you. We all hear both sides of the political spectrum. People talk about organizing labor and the importance of unions. And you'll see people on Facebook writing stuff about China and, oh, why can't we be more like them? Or why can't we have more goods? And why can't people have better pay? Well, guess what? You have to organize if you want these things. You have to start thinking ahead. So on your platform, that's one of the things you talk about. So tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends the importance of unions and why we should organize.
So my personal hero in modern history is Frances Stanny Perkins. She was basically the architect of modern labor law. FDR obviously gets all the credit for, you know, the New Deal and everything, but she was really the visionary behind it. Everything from the minimum wage to the 40-hour work week to, you know, child labor laws, Medicaid, all of that was her. She was the first woman cabinet member in the history of the United States. She was the Secretary of Labor. And she had a vision for this country in which labor was highly organized and information about pay is shared and debated and there's transparency. And that allows people to demand that they be paid fairly, that they live and work in safe conditions. And I feel like some of that dream has just never come to fruition, and I want to see it done.
That's wonderful.
I grew up in a state, Mississippi, that is very anti-union. You know, it's a right-to-work state, but it goes further than that. And being part of a teacher's union in Mississippi can be a death sentence for where you work. And you know, I've had conversations with my sister about this at length. There is one, but it's not effective because of the way that the state law cripples it. We need to make sure that states can't cripple organized labor. That's not right.
The whole
point of the New Deal over, you know, 80 years ago was to make it so that workers had rights. Because without workers, there are no corporations to profit. And I think we're at this point right now where, you know, they're seeing the mass exodus of employees. People are quitting. And it's because they're finally realizing they can't keep this show running without us. And if they expect us to show up to take the risk of COVID and you know, long hours and low pay, we're just not going to do it.
And leaving our children. And how many?
Or we're not going to do it.
And how many of us have to leave our children and our elderly parents at home, you know, to make a living? And then you have others that say, well, I don't want to vote for legislation for child care and the elderly. We have a couple of minutes left, Rebecca, and I wanted to ask you really quick, what is your how do you propose helping out the environment? I know the environment is something on your agenda as well. And for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Florida scientist Rebecca Jones, and she is a candidate for the Congressional First District here in Florida. So go ahead, really quick, the environment.
So this is the thing I'm actually educated in and I was hired to do. I'm a climate scientist academically. That's where I've published all my peer-reviewed literature and won all my awards. And you can't just legislate climate locally. It's great to do it, but the fact of the matter is that no matter how many times you turn off your water when you brush your teeth or turn off your lights, it's not going to change the fact that China and India are still the largest producers of greenhouse gases in the world. It's not going to change other countries like Russia from developing natural gas that is extremely potent in the atmosphere, even more so than carbon dioxide. We need global cooperation, and I believe that it can be done because we've done it before. We did it with the ozone hole with the Montreal Protocol in 1989, got the entire world to agree this is a problem, we're going to stop producing this stuff, and we did it. So the idea that we can't get it done is a false narrative, and we're going to get it done. I will be, I think, the only climate scientist in all of Congress. So I will be, you know, damn sure to make sure that we get it done.
You belong in Congress. We need you on the floor of the Senate. I mean, I could see myself traveling up to just to cheer you on. I think you have a great chance here in Florida. And it's going to take people like me and other people to listen and understand that we are all here for a purpose. And I think you found yours. So give us your website, my friend, so that people who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends can donate some time, maybe some energies, send you ideas, send you some money, because that's what it takes to get more women elected, is people supporting and listening and understanding that you're running for a reason.
Yes. So it's RebeccaJonesCampaign.com. And as you mentioned, my name is spelled the biblical way. So it's R-E-B-E-K-A-H, JonesCampaign.com. You can, of course, Google Rebecca Jones for Congress and it'll come up. Word of mouth is fantastic. Obviously, it costs money to reach the 252,000 people that we need to vote for me this November. So anything and everything that people can do is very much appreciated.
Thank you, Rebecca. I'm so grateful you called in. Ellen will take it from here.
Yeah, we've posted all of this on our Facebook page, and as well, we'll have it on our CETAMediaInc.com website very shortly after the show. And with these words, next couple of words from our sponsors, we'll be right back after these messages.
Portions of Viewpoint with CETA and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of CETA McGee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply CETA Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9, that's cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is CETA McGee, a very animated CETA McGee.
Yeah.
I'm so happy my friend Rebecca Jones was able to call in and share why she's running for office in Florida 1st Congressional District. And now, talk about woman empowerment and women doing great things with their daily lives, not just for people here in Brevard, but all over the world. My good friends from the Zonta Club is here. And Suzanne, take it away. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting us again.
There's no better time to invite people from the community who, through their service and advocacy and fundraising, does so much for Brevard. Claire Ellis, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. You're one of our dearest supporters, friends, and we appreciate you letting us come on and talk about the things that we do with fundraisers like the Chocolate Festival.
Yes. Well, you know, I wake up every day and I pretend that yesterday didn't happen. I just figure that I'm going to give the world the best of my abilities. And when I wake up, you know, Claire, I say to myself, what can I do today that makes the world a better place than I didn't do, that I didn't have the time to do it yesterday? And I think it means that God gave you the ability to speak and hear and see and walk, you know, on a daily basis. We'll open Facebook and we see people saying, I'm sending my thoughts and prayers because a father died, a mother died, a child died, someone got an amputation, someone lost their sight. You know, things are happening where we cannot enjoy life the way we should. And so I figured those of us who have a voice and is responsible and moderate with it, we should use it. And so that's why I'm out in the community supporting the Zonta Club and women's rights and whatever I do. So yes, tell us. I'm going to let Suzanne talk first, because I'm very interested in the ERA and why it's not ratified as yet. And I understand what's going on in the Senate in Washington, D.C., but I don't agree with it.
Right.
So talk to our listeners here on Viewpoint with Cedar and Friends. Tell us a little bit about yourself first and how you got involved with the ERA, with the ERA and Zonta Club.
Okay, well, I mean, the reason I'm involved in the ERA is because I'm female and I don't have equal constitutional rights with the men in this country, and I don't understand how that can be. I became involved in the Zonta Club 20-some years ago when I read a story in the newspaper about it, and my husband read it actually and texted me or called me and said, I don't think they had text then, and said, this is right up your alley. These people are doing all the things that we talk about, that you talk about, and that's how I became involved with them. I love the Zonta Club. They do a lot of wonderful things. A relatively small group of people doing a lot of really awesome work. And through the Zonta Club, I've advocated for getting the Equal Rights Amendment passed. Both in the state of Florida, the state of Florida has not ratified the Equal Rights Amendment, the federal Equal Rights Amendment. We have the Equal Rights Amendment, or we have an Equal Rights in our Florida Constitution. But for some reason, the powers that be apparently don't believe that we need it federally, which makes no sense that I can walk out of the state of Florida to another state that doesn't have equal rights in their state constitution and not have equal rights, not constitutional equal rights. So that's one aspect, is the Florida aspect. And then, of course, the one you hear about is the federal issue. The Equal Rights Amendment has been ratified by enough states. It should be in the Constitution, but as Sita said, because of
a technicality, yeah.
Or a couple technicalities probably, it's not yet in the Constitution. Right now, what needs to happen, there's a lot of things going on. There are lawsuits pending. There's documentation coming from the president. But most importantly, the House of Representatives passed a bill last year extending the deadline to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. And that bill, a similar bill, is sitting in the Senate right now, with, at the moment, unless it's changed, and there's more, but there are at least 51 co-sponsors. So, to my mind, it should be pulled up on the floor and voted for. The only reason I can imagine that it has not yet is that the Republicans have decided to filibuster it for some reason that I cannot fathom. I don't know that that's the answer, but I can't think of any reason why a bill would need any more than 51 co-sponsors. And that includes Republicans and independents as well as Democrats.
Yeah. So when the Zonta Club and the good folks who are in all the Zonta Clubs all over the United States, when you guys talk about promoting equality and justice and fundamental human rights, this mm-hmm. is part of it.
Absolutely.
So what can we do collectively as human beings in the United States to get this on the floor? What will it take for someone to say, I'm going to talk about this on the Senate floor?
I think right now the focus needs to be on talking to your senators and getting all the senators to support this particular federal bill. The state is a different situation. I mean, there's a similar thing going on, but it's further behind. In the federal Senate, we are so close to accomplishing this that if people do talk to their senators, and there are certain senators that are kind of on the fence, that are more,
but
I guess,
why
open.
Why would people be on the fence for
I don't understand. No, I can't tell you why you they're know? On the fence. I mean, I don't understand people that are on the other side of the fence or on the fence. I only understand why people would be on my side of the fence, which is to favor the Equal Rights Amendment and pass this law extending the deadline. Because the technicality is that certain states, three states, ratified the Equal Rights Amendment that had been voted on and passed by the federal Congress. Three states did that after a self-imposed deadline. And the Constitution does not provide for any deadline for a constitutional amendment, but Congress added one. So there's a legal fight over whether or not they could. But the fact that they did means that they can take it away. As easily as they put it in, they can take it away. And that's what's pending right now. Again, the House of Representatives has passed that, and we just need a vote to be brought up in the Senate, and it needs to be passed in the Senate.
And this ERA have been kicked around like a football for how long? At least 100 years?
About 100 years, yeah.
I mean, it's
introduced in 1923.
Yeah, it's
and we've been talking about it since then.
It's mind-boggling because it's like there has to be do's and don'ts why people won't pass it. Because I've heard people say, oh, well, everybody already have equal rights under the law. But that's not true because we see what happens with pay, for example, when a woman making less than a man, right? We
right,
see things
absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely. We have laws that mandate that women be treated equally to men, but those are laws that can be changed and have been changed. And one of the big issues in Congress right now is voting rights, and the Congress is changing our voting rights. Those are not necessarily set in stone. They can change those, and they can do the same thing with all of these statutes that address equal rights for women with men in individual. You know, like each statute is individually about one particular topic. But why on earth? I don't understand why on earth senators and representatives would want to deal with every problem that comes up as it comes up rather than instituting the amendment to the Constitution, which would negate the need to do all those
one
things.
By one. And
right. You
time.
Don't have to. You don't
and
have to wait
time.
Until a woman yeah. is harmed by something to say, oh, you know what? We shouldn't allow that to happen. If the constitutional amendment was there, there'd be less of an ability for people to take acts that would harm women that they would then have to come up with a law to prevent.
Yes. Sometimes I feel like women were being taken backwards. And I look at President Biden trying his best to introduce legislation with the Build Back Better Act and all that for child care and the elderly to be taken care of. And I'm like, look at him. He's pouring his heart out and saying, at the end of the day, all these responsibilities, most of them fall on women anyways.
Yeah.
You know, so why wouldn't the senators get on the floor and say, let's pass this? Because once we do, people are trying to take care of the whole world. They're trying to go to Ukraine and bring democracy over there. How about us? We need somebody
right.
to fight
start
for us
backyard.
For change, right?
Absolutely.
Like, doesn't change start in your own home? In your own yard, like my Jamaican friends always say, it's that in your own yard, man. You know, like, why try to fight for rights for women? I know that Zonta fights for support projects in 67 countries. We provide scholarships and awards and try to make sure that people have legal and political and economic freedom. We need that here.
We need more of it.
Absolutely. Right? We need that here. So maybe we ought to send a Zonta Club to Washington, D.C. and say, we're here to speak.
Oh, well, Zonta Club is international, so we're in a lot of different countries, and we're doing our best in politics in all the states as well as the federal government.
So in your mind, what would it take, you think, for someone in Washington, D.C. to say, I'm going to bring this on the floor? What's your call to action to our listeners on Viewpoint with CETA and Friends to get the ERA ratified and put an ink or pen or a technicality, typewritten, whatever they have to do to put it in the federal register?
Well, as I said, I'm not sure why it's not being called up for a vote, but my best guess and the only thing I can think of is that a threat of a filibuster, which means if we have 51 sponsors to the bill, we need at least 9 other senators in addition to the co-sponsors to indicate that they would vote for it. And I don't know where senators, other than the ones who have put their names on the co-sponsorship, I don't know where the other senators stand on that, because part of the problem is this is not something that's discussed. We're not, there's very limited. We have a lot of argument in this country. We don't have a lot of debate. We don't have a lot of debate about why about a particular particular bill. If there's a statute in Congress, let's talk about it instead of talking about it and people standing up on the floor and saying, here's why I oppose it or here's why I agree with it. We don't know where they stand.
Like, be respectable and listen to each other and try to find common ground, right?
Yes, but the filibuster now is just simply, they basically say, I filibuster, and nobody talks about it. Whereas before it was, to filibuster, you had to stand on the floor and you had to explain yourself.
Yeah.
You had to say, here's why
I think
this is a good or a bad idea. You had to go on the record.
Yeah.
And politicians have created, the senators have created a rule that prevents them from having to go on the record and having to explain why they're taking the positions that they're taking.
Were you able to get the two senators for the state of Florida on board with this? Did you call them? Did you try to reach out to them? Do they care about the equality for women the way you are passionate about it and all of us who would like to see the ERA ratified?
No, I have called them. I have called their offices, and I have not gotten any response, not even from an underling. So I don't know, honestly, where exactly they stand, but their lack of speaking speaks loud.
This is a former governor, Rick Scott, and the other one?
Marco Rubio.
Yeah.
Yes, and I don't know exactly where they stand. They avoid any mention of it, as far as I can see.
I wonder if I could cook them a good curry chicken and rice and go there.
I would love to sit down and talk to them.
Maybe I'll send an email.
I would love to hear people tell me why they think that it's not important for women to be in the Constitution. Let's have a conversation about it, because I can't think of any reason, and I don't think they're going to convince me otherwise, but I certainly would like to talk to them and explain why I think what I think and hear from them why they think what they think, and let's try to come to a compromise. That's what all of politics is about, supposed to be about.
It's
talking
like
about our issues and coming to an agreement.
It's like my mother would say, you're here because of a woman.
Yes.
Those two guys who are senators in the state of Florida are on this planet because a woman carried them for 9 months. So let's talk about women and all that we bring, all that we bear in this world. We multitask. We do everything. So give us a chance. Let them hear us.
Yes.
Maybe we'll send them. I see Clay wants to
jump
in.
Let me just add, people have a short memory. In the 70s, a woman could not have a credit card in her own name.
Couldn't buy a house.
No, couldn't own property. Let's not forget these things. Why shouldn't women be in the Constitution?
Right.
We need that.
Yeah. And we're watching right now in our country where what's happening with reproductive rights. We're watching where women are saying, wait a minute, what's happening in Texas and all these different states. And I think it's very important, like you say, that we have a civil conversation with men of power, men in political office, to say, this is where we stand. I think you're right, Susan. So how can somebody get involved if they wanted to reach out to you? Do you have a website, an email, or tell us how they can get involved?
Yes, our website, zontaspacecoast.org. If anybody wants to volunteer, help us in doing what we're doing, spreading information, talking to politicians, please contact zontaspacecoast.org.
And we're also on Facebook. I would point that out. There's a lot of information on
Facebook.
Yes,
there's a lot of
information
on Facebook, too, and Twitter.
So in addition to the Zonta Club and my good friend Suzanne Taylor getting involved with the ERA, and it's something that I'm passionate about myself, the Zonta Club does a lot of other stuff right here in Brevard. And I know, Claire, you opened our eyes to human trafficking.
Yes.
And how much of that goes on in Brevard and around the United States, around the world. And we saw during COVID-19 with the lockdown, domestic violence, human trafficking, the war on women, it escalated. So talk to us a little bit about that, and then we'll go right into the fundraising part of the Zonta Club and the Chocolate Festival.
Sure. Thank you. Well, we are all about awareness, making as many people as possible aware about all these issues that affect women. We talk to so many groups. I've been with the Zonta Club of Melbourne 17, 18 years, and still, when I go to speak, the issues about domestic violence, what's happening with human trafficking, people are just totally unaware of what's happening locally, what's happening in the world. The Chocolate Festival is a good way. It's a beautiful event, a fun event, a fundraiser for us, but it also allows us to educate the public about labor trafficking. A lot of times everybody thinks it's just about sex trafficking. Well, there's labor trafficking as well. And it's getting worse, if not better. So many children, especially, are enslaved all over the world.
Yeah, we were all watching in Afghanistan what's happening. You see articles and photographs and people talking about parents who've got all these children and they have to sell a couple of the kids in order to feed the ones that are left at home. And that's happening. I just watched a Hindi film and I contacted the director and the producer of the film, who happens to be an Indian doctor that lives in Arizona. And after a couple of weeks, he responded to me, and he's going to be calling in on the show. He actually wrote the film, produced it, and directed it. It's called Safraz, I think. I'll have to get the name of it for you. But I thought about you when I watched the film, and it showed you what happened on the border of Afghanistan and Pakistan with these children being taken in this vehicle across the border to be sold to very wealthy men for sex trafficking.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it broke my heart because I'm like, this is something that, you know, you've always talked about on our show.
Yes, it's as hard as we work, this is the part, it's sad, the more we try to do for it, it seems to be growing. Now it's a $150 billion industry. And so many things happen that we... People think, oh, they're going to be grabbed, taken off the street, or strangers. The majority are people they know, people they trust, people in their surroundings.
Yes.
People they have a relationship with. Is more that and the internet. Obviously, the internet is huge, but it's not always about strangers.
Guest, right? When we all kind of, our mouths all fell open with Rebecca Jones.
Yes,
was talking about her uncle, you know, making her uncle grandfather?
Grandfather.
Uncle, grandfather.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it is local. And you have to think about, you know, Claire, you always talk about the signs, like what to look for, because mm-hmm. I think, you know, sometimes we get like these blinders on and we don't pay attention. But I see things like during the pandemic, for instance, there were three young children. They were probably maybe 12 to 13 or 14 years old walking along Wickham Road selling these little toys, saying that they were raising money. And I said, and it was cold out and it was during a pandemic and they weren't wearing masks. And I looked at the three of them and I said, who's putting you up to this? And they were like, don't. And I looked at the lady inside. I said, call the police. You know, it's not call the police on them. It's not them doing anything bad. It's finding out what van just dropped them off on Wickham Road on a busy street to go sell little dollar gifts like that.
Hey. Thank you for bringing that up. They go door to door. They go to business. And we have a policy and what we tell people. Listen, they're getting very sophisticated now, too, and they tell you they're getting scholarships and they're helping teenagers on drugs and all this. I'm sorry, none of that is what's really happening. Don't buy anything. You're not helping them. You're helping the traffickers.
Right.
And what we suggest is if they come to you, do this. They probably haven't had anything to eat or drink. Give them a snack and some water. Don't buy anything. And unfortunately, I will say, do not invite them into your home. You don't know who else is behind
them. Give them your email and phone number.
But call your local police. You don't have to call 911, but all the local police, your local police number, they're aware. They understand. Several years ago, they rescued 24 of these children in Palm Bay. They bring them in the vans, and it's human trafficking. And I will add to that, what I think too is happening now is a lot of the peddlers on the street, or they hold a sign, I need food, water, transportation. They were standing there with two children, a man and a woman, and I saw them at Post and Wickham, and then the next day I saw them at the Melbourne Mall. So I'm thinking it's...
That they're moving around.
They're moving around.
Well,
so
you
come.
Know, I was doing my research this morning for the show, and then I was reading where 70% of the world's 1.3 billion people are women. And during the pandemic, it came out that one in every three women is beaten or coerced into sex or human trafficked. And I'm grateful there's an organization like the Zonta Club to help. How can someone who wants to volunteer their time or give donations and stuff, how can they join?
Well, first I want to say what they can do is come to our chocolate festival on March 13th from 11 to 3. We need volunteers. We have information. It's about the wonderful chocolate and the Brevard's Best Chocolate Fix, but it's about teaching the public about what to look for in labor trafficking. And the big thing about chocolate is about many everything you buy. You have to look at what does it say. UTZ, Fair Trade, the Green Frog, Rainforest Alliance on chocolate. Look for these symbols. Not all chocolate has it, because many children are enslaved on the cocoa plantations. They need the children to get the cocoa pods out of the trees. And many are enslaved on these cocoa plantations.
Yeah, they're not in school.
They're
48.4
their parents
million sell
them,
children.
The parents are
yes.
in debt, many other reasons. And I looked on the international website of a list of products in countries where they believe are made by enslaved children. And I just want to tell you maybe the top few that I couldn't believe myself. I mean, you just can't, the list is there for anybody that goes to the U.S. International website of products made by child labor. Gold. 24 countries have children in the gold mines.
Ugh.
22 countries have children in the brick ovens making bricks. 17 countries have children on the coffee plantations and tobacco plantations. Cotton. Sugarcane. There's 14 countries that have enslaved children with the fish industry. I always say, please buy fresh. Forget about the frozen fish. The fishermen are enslaved. They pay to get these jobs from other countries. They're on these boats all day long, 22 hours, and they're not, especially the shrimp. They're not looking, they're not fishing for shrimp. What they're doing all day is fishing for the shrimp food for the shrimp farms.
Yes.
The shrimp in the sea are gone. Buy local here.
So think where you're spending your dollar, because a child could be enslaved.
Think where you're spending
yes.
that dollar is
yes.
right. Look
and
for
I've
these.
I've never
symbols.
Enjoyed chocolate so much since you've told me about the chocolate not to eat. And the chocolate that's all... Zonta approved is all much
well,
better
Kat,
than the other.
I was surprised that KitKat was
Sita,
on that list with the green
we had to do a
the
therapy with Sita.
So tell our listeners again the date for the chocolate festival, the place, the time, the tickets, because we
okay.
only have a few minutes
March
left. We want to get that in.
11 to 3, the Melbourne Auditorium. You can get your tickets ahead of time, are $35, $40 at the door. ZontaSpaceCoast.org. And I can also give a phone number, 321-728-7508. We're going to know a lot more competitors this evening. We're having a big meeting, but right now, our wonderful friend Yellow Dog, that's been with us from the beginning.
Oh, that chocolate is
so
good.
The Melhi Culinary Group is going to be there, Southern Caramel. We want to thank some of our sponsors already, Northrop Grumman, our wonderful ambassador, Zonta Ambassador Sandy Mickelson, Four Seas Nursery, Liz Rollert, and the Melcher family. We're excited. Come and visit us.
Is it a pet-friendly event?
Can
they bring, they can't, okay, so they
no.
can, but we have parking. We have parking and everything.
Yes, yes.
Now, we have a couple of minutes, 3 minutes, so... You had mentioned to me that State Attorney Ashley Moody was helping in some way. I'd like to get that in, because this is one of those things that proves that Republicans and Democrats can work together for the good of the people.
Absolutely. She has established a new statewide tip line, 1-800-342-0820. It's operated 24/7 by Florida Department of Law Enforcement to report human trafficking. And she's also established the 100% Club. It's a new initiative for any Florida business that will pledge to train their employees on the signs of human trafficking and provide them with resources to effectively report it. And that's how we can help businesses. We can train the employees, and that's what Zonta Club of Melbourne does. And so if you want to be in the 100% Club, then they'll also send information to all the employees so they can have the card with them with the numbers, what to look for. And it's brand new. It just started. And so let's support it. For
so if you see something, say something. And what about Bras for a Cause? Are you still doing that?
That's a different event. So I don't know what their plans are. We are collecting bras, though, and I think we will collect them if they'd like to bring them to the chocolate festival. Yes.
I was just going to say that might be easier for a lot of us because I have quite a few that I collected and they're sitting in my laundry room.
Please
bring them to the chocolate festival. Chocolate for a bra.
New, gently used, and they will go to women survivors of human trafficking that are starting their own business. And they in Mozambique, many of them will go to Mozambique, and these women will be selling the bras. They don't have the types of bras that we do in this country. And so it's a wonderful business that they have helped the survivors start. So you can bring those. We'll have plenty of bags available for collection at
Perfect.
The chocolate festival.
I think that would be great because, you know, a lot of people need to know that the Zonta Club in Melbourne and the money that you make from this fundraiser, it goes to support programs to improve the lives of women and girls, not just here in Brevard, but all over the world. You guys give out a lot of scholarships. And
yes.
What you do for the community and to help fight domestic violence and human trafficking, it's just commendable. Thank you so much. I mean, I wish we could do more and we could have you all more often on the show just because... This is why we're here. We see something that needs to be done, and we try to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you are doing, Suzanne, with the ERA, and just like you're doing with helping us with this. So give us your information one more time, Suzanne or Claire, for people to get involved with bringing the bras to the festival, buying the chocolates, buying the tickets, and supporting Zonta.
And a raffle. We'll have beautiful raffles there always. So many beautiful baskets support the raffle as well.
Another food in addition to the chocolate.
Yes, we have to have
beverages. Lots of beverages,
yes.
So thank you so much again for a fantastic show here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Rebecca Jones, don't forget that name. Make sure you look up her information. And as well with the Zonta Club, there's so many things to talk about. Unfortunately, we just can't fit it all in. Once again, thanks again, Sita, for bringing all these great guests to right here in Brevard County and bringing them all to light. We'll see you next week here on 1 o'clock.
Yeah.